Prime Minister statement.
With permission, Mr. Speaker, I will make a statement about the report of the Falkland Islands Review Committee. The House will remember that I announced the setting up of the Review Committee in July 1982 after consultation with the Right Honourable Gentleman, the Leader of the Opposition, and leading Privy Councillors in other parties. At that time, I expressed the hope that the committee would be able to complete its work within 6 months. The committee has justified that hope. I received its report on the 31st of December 1982, and I am presenting it to Parliament as a command paper this afternoon. Copies are now available in the vote office. I should like to express the government's gratitude to the noble Lord Franks and to his colleagues for the amount of time and effort which they have devoted to producing such a thorough and comprehensive report in so short a time. The report makes it clear that the committee has was provided with all the papers relevant to its terms of reference, including a comprehensive collection of reports from the intelligence agencies. The committee's report contains a number of references to intelligence matters which would not in other circumstances be divulged. These references are essential for a full understanding of the matters into which the committee was asked to inquire, and the government has agreed that the public interest requires that on this occasion the normal rule against public reference to the intelligence organisation or to material derived from intelligence reports should be waived. The government has, however, agreed with Lord Franks amendments to certain of the references to intelligence reports with a view to minimising potential damage to British intelligence interests. Lord Franks has authorised me to tell the House that he agrees that, first, all the references to intelligence reports included in the committee's report as submitted have been retained in the report as presented to Parliament, most of them without amendment. Second, that none of the amendments that have been made alters the sense, substance, or emphasis of the reference to the intelligence report concerned, or removes anything of significance to the committee's account of the matters referred to it, or to its findings and conclusions. Third, that apart from those agreed amendments, no other deletions or amendments have been made to the committee's report as submitted. Mr. Speaker, the report is unanimous and is signed by all the members of the committee without qualification. It falls into four chapters. The first gives an account of the dispute from 1965, when the issue was first brought formally to international attention by a resolution of the General Assembly of the United Nations from that time, 1965, to May 1979. The second chapter covers the period from May 1979 to the 19th of March 1982. The third deals with the fortnight from the 19th of March to the 2nd of April 1982, which included the South Georgia incident and which led up to the Argentine invasion of the Falkland Islands. The fourth and final chapter deals with the way in which the government discharged its responsibilities in the period leading up to the invasion. There are six annexes, the first of which deals with 10 specific assertions which have been made by some who have commented on the matters in question. In the fourth chapter of the report, that is the one which deals with the way government discharged its responsibilities, the committee notes a number of points where, in its judgment, different decisions might have been taken, fuller consideration of alternative courses of action might have been advantageous, and the machinery of government could have been better used. This chapter defines and addresses itself to two crucial questions. First, could the government have foreseen the invasion of the 2nd of April 1982? Second, could the government have prevented the invasion? The committee emphasizes that its report should be read as a whole. At this stage, therefore, I will do no more than quote the committee's conclusions on these two crucial questions. On the first question, whether the government could have foreseen the invasion of the 2nd of April, the committee's conclusion is as follows, and I quote, "In the light of this evidence, we are satisfied that the government did not have warning of the decision to invade. The evidence of the timing of the decision taken by the junta shows that the government not only did not, but could not have had earlier warning. The invasion of the Falkland Islands on the 2nd of April could not have been foreseen." I have just quoted, Mr. Speaker, the whole of paragraph 266. On this second question, whether the government could have prevented the invasion, the committee's conclusion contained in the final paragraph of the report is as follows. Against this background, we have pointed out in this chapter where different decisions might have been taken, where fuller consideration of alternative courses of action might, in our opinion, have been advantageous, and where the machinery of government could have been better used. But if the British government had acted differently in the ways we have indicated, it is impossible to judge what the impact on the Argentine government or the implications for the course of events might have been. There is no reasonable basis for any suggestion, which would be purely hypothetical, that the invasion would have been prevented if the government had acted in the ways indicated in our report. Taking account of these considerations and of all the evidence we have received, we conclude that we would not be justified in attaching any criticism or blame to the present government for the Argentine junta. Mr. Speaker, may I, Mr. Speaker, finish the conclusion of the Franks Committee? It is their conclusion and has nothing to do with anything the government. We conclude that we would not be justified in attaching any criticism or blame to the present government for the Argentine junta's decision to commit its act of unprovoked aggression in the invasion of the Falkland Islands on the 2nd of April, 1982. Mr. Speaker, I have quoted in full the final paragraph of the Franks report. Mr. Speaker, time will of course be found for an early debate, and that will be discussed through the usual channels. The government will welcome an early opportunity of discussing the matters contained in the report more thoroughly than is possible this afternoon.
Mr. Michael Foote.
May I first of all, Mr. Speaker, refer to the question that was raised by my honourable friend, the member for West Lothian, a few minutes ago. And may I suggest to the Right Honourable Lady that it would be advisable in these circumstances, because I do believe that anyone who looks at some of the reports that did appear could come to a prima facie opinion that there had been some leakages. I therefore suggest that the Right Honourable Lady should undertake to look into the matter and make a report to the House and a statement to the House on the subject. I think it is much the most satisfactory way to deal with it, and it has been done on some previous occasions. As for the need for a debate, I'm sure that the Right Honourable Lady's proposal about that will be fully accepted. We on this side of the House naturally concur with that suggestion. I hope that the government will agree that the debate, which I trust could take place next week, would be a two-day debate, because I think it would be quite unsatisfactory after the lengthy debates we had on this subject last year that we should have a debate in which would be principally occupied by Privy Councillors. Many of them have every right to speak, of course, but I hope that there will be a full 2 days' debate, and the Right Honourable Lady will agree to that here and now. Then most of the Right Honourable Lady's statement was on procedural questions, and I put to her one procedural question before I come to the further matter. She did tell us when the committee was established in July, and I think it was a quite proper undertaking to be given, of course, that if any minister or civil servant felt aggrieved or felt that they had suffered unfair criticism in the report, that they would have the chance of reappearing before the commission to state their view or to have their view further taken into account. And could she tell us whether any civil servants or ministers availed themselves of that possibility? Now I come to the question of the conclusions. The Right Honourable Lady quoted, referred to the statement that is made absolutely clearly in paragraph 336 in the report. It is essential that our report should be read as a whole. And as one of the very few members of this House who's had the chance of reading it, I am happy to confirm that judgment. And I think I can illustrate it best, particularly in the light of the references to the machinery of government and the failures that may have occurred there, to which the Right Honourable Lady referred in quoting the last paragraph. But I would also like to quote a paragraph from the report which I believe illustrates why it is so necessary to examine the whole report before anyone passes judgments about its conclusions. And of course it is necessary to draw the right conclusions to make sure that the same kind of tragic errors are not committed in the future, errors which, in the words of the Foreign Secretary who resigned, led to a national humiliation. And so we do need to know, oh, it was pretty tragic for the people who were killed. Yeah. We do need to know whether in fact there are going to be measures taken to ensure that, for example, in the case of police, which is not such a different example, that in such cases measures are taken to ensure that such a tragic development does not occur again. And for these reasons, I wish to quote to the House another paragraph, and which I believe illustrates the case most clearly. It is paragraph 115. When they were informed of the decision, that is the council in the Falkland Island councils, that is of the decision to withdraw the HMS Endurance, when they were informed of the decision, the Falkland Islands councils held a joint meeting on the 26th of June 1981, following which they sent a message to Lord Carrington in the following terms. The people of the Falkland Islands deplore in the strongest terms the decision to withdraw HMS Endurance from service. They express extreme concern that Britain appears to be abandoning its defence of British interests in the South Atlantic and Antarctic at a time when other powers are strengthening their position in these areas. They feel that such a withdrawal will further weaken British sovereignty in this area in the eyes not only of islanders, but of the world. They urge that all possible endeavours be made to secure a reversal of this decision. In the following page, it will be described, and is described to the report, I think, for the first time fully, what happened to those all possible endeavours. One would have thought that in the face of such an appeal, those all possible endeavours should have included a reference of this matter to the Cabinet, perhaps, or the Defence Committee of the Cabinet. There was a difference of opinion between the Foreign Secretary and the Defence Secretary as to, we're talking now about what happened to the Falkland Islands. There was a difference of opinion, I'm coming to the question to the Right Honourable Lady, there was a difference of opinion between the Foreign Secretary and the Defence Secretary about the withdrawal of the Endurance, and the Foreign Secretary who resigned, the Foreign Secretary who resigned persisted in his attempt to raise the matter. I say, Mr. Speaker, and I ask the Right Honourable Lady whether she does not agree with me. Now, I ask her, does she not think that the proper place for this question to have been decided, this difference between the Foreign Secretary and the Defence Secretary, was either in the Defence Committee over which she presides or the Cabinet over which she's supposed to preside. And I say, therefore, does she not agree, having read the whole report as I've read it, what this report illustrates is a collapse of effective Cabinet government in this country, and it is... A cabinet government in this country which could not even discuss this appeal from the Falkland Islands. That's the fact of the matter. And I ask the Right Honourable Lady now to tell us what changes she is making in the effective control of the government to see that such a tragic situation as this doesn't arise again.
Mr. Speaker, with regard to the first question that the Right Honourable Gentleman raised, and which was raised before I made my statement about alleged briefing of the press, may I say that the remarks which were made, I think rightly, cause deep offence to a very distinguished civil servant who has in fact served both companies. The leaking was not from number 10. May I, in view of the fact that a civil servant has been named, and it is my duty and pleasure to defend him, may I say this, there was never any arrangement for my press secretary to brief the press on the contents of the Franks report before its publication. To help the press digest the report in the short time available to them after publication, he was prepared to give them a list of numbers of key paragraphs. Paragraphs could have been tested against the report when published, and it could have been seen whether he had been fair or not. Is the Honourable Gentleman suggesting that he would have been unfair?
Yes. What I'm suggesting to the Honourable Lady is that when she talks about this guidance for certain paragraphs, at the same time, she just uttered in response to my honourable friend the fact that the whole of the report should be read in its entirety, not on separate passages.
So the honourable gentleman is not accusing my press secretary. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, for enabling me to make that. However, in view of what occurred in the House last night, which I heard about, I specifically instructed him not to brief the press at all on the paragraphs or in any way. He did not therefore brief on the paragraphs and had never any intention at any time of briefing on the contents, nor did he brief on the contents. The only people outside the government who have had the report in advance of publication are the Leader of the Opposition, the former Prime Ministers, and the former ministers who are... I will come to the moment, Wayne. And the former Prime Ministers who resigned when the invasion took place. They were given the report at midday yesterday. The leaders of the other opposition parties... The leaders of the other opposition parties consulted on the establishment of the committee, and you, Mr. Speaker, received it this afternoon. Now, the Right Honourable Gentleman then went on to make some further comments. I agree with him. The report should be read as a whole, which is why I did only quoted the conclusions, which I think one is entitled to quote, when a Franks Committee has been set up to pronounce on precisely those matters, and it would have been absurd to do otherwise. The Right Honourable Gentleman then went on to point out to paragraphs about endurance and, indeed, about the decision to withdraw it. He should also, if the report is to be read as a whole, refer to paragraph 44, which points out that the one consequence of the 1974 defence review, which resulted in a phased rundown of overseas commitments outside NATO, was a decision to take HMS Endurance out of service. I will read on the next sentence and the next one if need be. There was a decision to take HMS Endurance out of service. It was not implemented. Neither was our decision to take HMS Endurance out of service. The fact is that the invasion occurred while Endurance was on station. He should also direct attention to signals and developments in British policy which occurred in paragraph 278 to 281, which refer also to other signals given through both governments.
Order. 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 I will take the Honourable Gentleman's point of order if you can't wait till the end of the answer that's being given. But may I say to the House, it's very wrong on an issue of this magnitude that anyone should have to fight to be heard. It's very wrong indeed. Mr. Ron Layton, point of order.
Mr. Speaker, is it in order and is it helpful and is it proper for the Prime Minister to pick and choose paragraphs of a document which none of us have had a chance to read?
Mr. Speaker, I did not select this particular point. I am just replying to it. I do not intend to quote from other paragraphs, merely to point out that there is a great deal which is also pertinent to the point that the Right Honourable Gentleman, the Leader of the Opposition, has selected to be found in 278, paragraph 278 to paragraph 281. With regard to what the Right Honourable Gentleman said about meetings of the Overseas and Defence Committee, there is something which perhaps I might tell him which is not found in the report. In 1981, there were 18 meetings of the Overseas and Defence Committee. In 1982, between January to March, there were further 5 meetings of OD. What is arranged is a matter partly for the ministers themselves concerned. He may like to wish to indicate how frequently OD meetings met under him, but in fact, The policy had been discussed, the Right Honourable Gentleman fine, the policy had been discussed and was not changed, but there were plenty of meetings of OD committee.
Mr. Michael, first.
Lady, tell me about these meetings of the Defence Committee. Did they discuss the Falklands? And did they discuss in particular the representations that were made on behalf of the Falklands Council by the Foreign Secretary and the representations that were made by the Foreign Secretary for the non-withdrawal of the HMS Endurance to the Minister of Defence? That was a division of opinion, a major division of opinion between the Foreign Secretary and the Defence Secretary, and surely that should have been discussed at the Defence Committee, and the responsibility for ensuring what things are discussed at the Defence Committee rests not with the Foreign Secretary or the Defence Secretary, but with the Prime Minister, who's the chairman of the committee.
The facts as to what was discussed and when and how they were dealt with and how they were dealt with between ministers, members of OD, are dealt with fully in the report. And should be read in full. The report points out that meetings were not again discussed at OD, And that was not, I believe, unreasonable at the time in view of the close contact kept between ministers on that occasion. But it seems to me, what the Right Honourable Gen... It was discussed on many occasions, not necessarily at OD and Defence, no, Overseas and Defence Committee. And if the right, if the Honourable Gentleman thinks, or Right Honourable Gentleman thinks, that somehow you become totally different when you get in that committee, then I find it utterly amazing that this is the only comments they've got to offer on this report and its conclusion.
It isn't, the Right Honourable Lady mustn't say that. This isn't the only question we want to discuss. We want the House of Commons to discuss this report on the basis which the Franks Committee itself has said, that is, it's essential to discuss the whole report. But in the meantime, can the Right Honourable Lady also answer the other question that I put, to which she's not replied? Did any ministers or civil servants exercise their right to return to the Commission to put their case?
Mr. Speaker, that was a part of the arrangements made, I think, and published with Lord Franks. Everything that was put in that letter was honoured, I understand, completely.
Mr. Callaghan.
Mr. Speaker, on the point of endurance, which is not the major point here, but is not the difference between the Right Honourable Lady's reading and the facts, that in the case where she quoted from paragraph 44, that the Defence Secretary in the Labour government proposed to abandon endurance and was overruled, whereas in the case that she has referred to in her own government, it was the Foreign Secretary who was overruled and the decision to abandon endurance was announced. And that surely is all the difference in the world. But on the major question, Mr. Speaker, doesn't it really come to this, that all parties for many years, including the Right Honourable Lady's government, has been prepared to give up the sovereignty of the Falklands, provided we could get a substantial period of lease back, and the Right Honourable Lady was committed to that until March of this year. Is it further not the fact that all governments were determined not to desert the Falklanders because they thought it would be unacceptable? And was it not also the case that all governments believed that the worst of all possible policies, and one that might be unsustainable in the long run and was certainly undesirable in the short run, was a Falkland fortress, Falkland policy? And is not the result of the government's handling of these matters during the last 12 months, that what we have been presented with under the Right Honourable Lady's direction is a short-term military victory and a long-term political retreat and dead end?
Mr. Speaker, I am almost wary of saying anything that does not quote from the report. But as the Right Honourable Gentleman has seen, something of the themes of which he spoke and of factors common to the approach of both governments are contained in the early pages of the report. And the significant themes of the period are summed up in para 70. It would seem, and the dilemma applied to both governments, that Argentina wanted sovereignty and the Falkland Islanders, whose wishes we regarded as paramount, wanted to stay British. That was the fundamental dilemma which applied to both governments. In the end, the Argentinians invade, and it seems to me, with due respect to the Right Honourable Gentleman, that we have no option now except Fortress Falklands if we are to continue, as I believe we should, to honour the wishes of the Falkland Islanders.
John Payton.
Mr. Speaker, would my right honourable friend not agree that there is something pitiful in this scavenge hunt now being conducted by the opposition for a few crumbs of comfort? And would she not further agree that there ought to be a measure of sympathy, not much, but some, for the Right Honourable Gentleman, the Member for Cardiff South East, who quite obviously had hoped for so much from this report, who had hoped for a stick with which he might be able to beat the government, and has instead been presented with a mirror to look at his own disappointed visage.
Mr. Speaker, the conclusions of the report are clear. I believe with Franks that the report really should be read as a whole by all Right Honourable and Honourable members. We have very adequate time to debate it, being arranged through the usual channels. How far questioning continues is, of course, a matter for you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. David Steele.
Join with the thanks to my noble friend Lord Franks and his colleagues for the swift and thorough report which they've given to us. Does the Prime Minister recall that the decision to withdraw HMS Endurance was in fact a controversial one in the House at the time? And will she accept that Lord Franks not only reveals the message from the Falkland Islands Council, but further to what the Leader of the Opposition reported, it also reveals that a letter was sent from our embassy in Buenos Aires in the summer of 1981, saying that all Argentine newspaper articles highlighted the theme that Britain was abandoning the protection of the Falkland Islands, and that that was further supported by an intelligence report in the autumn of 1981 that the withdrawal of HMS Endurance had been construed by the Argentines as a deliberate political gesture, since the implications for the islands and for Britain's position in the South Atlantic were fundamental. Now, in view of all that, surely the Prime Minister must tell the House why she did not give her support to Lord Carrington when he was trying to retain the ship on station.
Mr. Speaker, I believe the Right Honourable Gentleman is looking with something of hindsight, but may I repeat what I said? Endurance was retained and in fact was on station and was between the Falklands and South Georgia at the time of invasion of the Falklands. She had been on station at Falklands. She was sent down to South Georgia when the incident occurred there. And she was on her way back when we had the intelligence about the Falklands. So whatever the criticisms, the fact is that Endurance was on station. The report does say that it was a signal to the Argentines, but it also gives a lot of other signals alongside that. Some of which are attributable to Honourable and Right Honourable Gentlemen opposite, and some to us. Those signals are contained in the paragraphs which I indicated.
Order. Remind the House, order, that it has already been indicated this matter will be debated in the near future, and that therefore we are not debating it today. Questions, I hope, will be succinct, and I shall allow questions to continue for a while. Which side of the House was it? Yeah. Sir John Eden.
Would my right honourable friend set aside the small-minded questioning of the opposition and remind the House that the prime act of duplicity was committed by the Argentine junta.
Yeah, yeah.
And would she confirm that throughout, ministers and officials of her government made clear to the Argentine that the wishes of the Falkland Islands would remain paramount?
Mr. Speaker, I agree with my right honourable friend. I believe that some of the noise we've had is perhaps due to the fact that some Right Honourable Gentlemen do not, in fact, like the conclusions of this independent committee. I agree with my Right Honourable friend. It was, of course, and it is inherent in the Franks report, the Argentinians who decided to invade, and they say that this British government not only could not have foreseen that invasion, but could not have prevented it. I hope that at this time in particular, there will be no question of departing from the wish which has sustained really both sides of this Honourable House through the many, many debates we've had it, that the wishes of the Falkland Islanders are paramount, and in that case we must in fact defend them in accordance with those wishes.
George Fulkes.
Mr. Speaker, does the Prime Minister not recall, in the debate on the 8th of July, when the Franks Committee was set up, that some of us predicted that since she had the power to choose the members of the committee... Since she had the power to determine the terms of reference, and since she had the power to manipulate its publication, we predicted that it would be an establishment cover-up and a whitewash. Since she is one of the few people that has had the privilege of reading the whole report, will she confirm if our predictions, our fears have been confirmed, and whether her hopes have been realised?
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman will recall that I had consultations with the leaders of political parties in this House. We jointly agreed on Lord Franks as the chairman, and there could be no better servant of this country than Lord Franks. And I resent deeply what the Honourable Gentleman has said as a criticism and a slur on Lord Franks and on the whole committee. We also agreed with other parties, the other independent members of the committee, Sir Patrick Nairn. We also agreed that each of us, both the opposition and the government party, should propose two names, and those two were discussed. The arrangements about the membership of the committee were therefore agreed in full and proper consultation across all parties of this House. The terms of reference were in fact... of reference were debated in this House and I believe fully approved, and I hope the Honourable Gentleman will withdraw his slur.
Sir Angus Maud.
Would it not be right to emphasise the fact that in a summary annex to this unanimous report, the committee dealt with each and every assertion and allegation made by opponents of the government and independent commentators about prior warning or information that the government had received before the invasion, and found all of them to be without foundation?
Mr. Speaker, that is correct. There is a summary in the first annex of the various assertions that have been made by various commentators and the findings of the committee upon those assertions.
Sir Roy Jenkins.
Will the Prime Minister tell us whether there was, in fact, any collective discussion of the Falklands issue between ministers in the early months, right up to the end of March of last year? Either in OPD or Cabinet or any other collective forum? And will she also say whether it was correct that at the end of the question of the former Prime Minister, she indicated that she had no policy for the indefinite future other than that of Fortress Falklands?
Mr. Speaker, the matter was not discussed in OD during the period from January to March. And I may say, if I had, I do not think there would have been any difference at all. There were a series of minutes from Lord Carrington over a long period, in addition to other contacts, with which he kept in touch with all members of OD. The Right Honourable General will find that referred to. The Right Honourable General says, has one no other policy than Fortress Falklands? The policy is that the wishes of the islanders will be paramount, and that used also to be the policy of the government of which he was a member. It is a policy which this House has insisted should be upheld. The defence requirements after an invasion now follow from that policy.
The Tamdiel.
The Prime Minister recollect that on Tuesday, the 26th of October, in answer to substantial question number one, she confirmed that the Falklands crisis had come out of the blue to her, on Wednesday, the 31st of March. Since we now know that nuclear submarines and Royal Fleet auxiliaries were dispatched from Gibraltar on Monday, the 29th of March, and since we now know that the crew of the Fort Austin, possibly carrying nuclear weapons, were told that they weren't going home but to the South Atlantic on Sunday, the 28th of March, by the Barmaids of Gibraltar, how is it that the Barmaids of Gibraltar have better information about the destination of the fleet with nuclear weapons than the British Prime Minister?
Mr. Speaker, I find the Honourable Gentleman's question somewhat convoluted. The submarine was dispatched on that Monday because, of course, we were worried about the incident in South Georgia. And we dispatched the submarine and also Royal Fleet Auxiliary to help keep Endurance, about which there's been so much discussion, actively on station.
Order. I propose to call three more from either side and then to continue with the business. Sir Paul Bryan.
Does my right honourable friend recall that in the debate on the Falkland Islands Review in July, the right honourable member for Cardiff South East stated that when the Labour government was negotiating with the Argentines in 1977, he made certain that there was a naval presence off the Falkland Islands to strengthen the hand of the negotiating minister and to deter the Argentines. Does the report cover that situation in its opening chapter, and does it state whether the Argentines were in fact aware of that naval presence?
Mr. Speaker, that force is one of the matters dealt with in the report. It was dealt with in extenso earlier in the report, but it's also dealt with in the specific assertions which are summarised in the annex. It's dealt with in the fifth assertion, the assertion being that Argentina was informed by the British government of their decision to send a task force in 1977. I had better quote precisely. The facts relating to the deployment of ships to the area in November 1977 are set out in our report. See paragraphs 65 to 66. We have had no evidence that the Argentine government became aware of this deployment.
Tony Benn.
Is the Prime Minister aware that most people reading this report will not be interested in the preservation of reputations on either side, but in a single simple question: could the lives lost in the Falklands War have been saved if other action had been taken? And may I ask the Prime Minister to turn her mind to the question not whether the arming of the Falklands Islands earlier might have made an invasion more difficult, but the much more specific political question: why, when Lord Carrington on the 20th of September 1979, referred to in paragraph 73 of the report, said in a paper to the Cabinet that it was in the British interest and that of the islanders to have substantive negotiations on sovereignty, and came back to the same theme on the 12th of October when he said that Fortress Falkland's option would carry a serious threat of invasion? That was the Foreign Secretary's view as early as 1979. Why did the Prime Minister veto that very wise political advice and create circumstances in which Lord Carrington's warning came into effect? Because the real lesson of that page of the report is that it was a political failure by the government and not a failure to keep the Endurance or to send further troops. And it is that political failure that the military success has not yet obliterated or dealt with in any sense.
Mr. Speaker, the Franks report has come to its two conclusions. First, that we could not have foreseen the invasion, did not and could not, and secondly, we could not have prevented it. It has come to those two clear conclusions. For the rest of the report, I do suggest the Right Honourable General reads it in toto rather than take from specific parts upon it. He will find that what he said has been part of the fundamental dilemma to which the Right Honourable Gentleman referred. If we were to avoid going into what was called confrontation, which has many, many meanings attached to it and many, many different levels, we had to negotiate with the Argentines. That was done over many, many years, and the report sets out the history from 1965. It is thought that if those negotiations ever ceased, then there might have been some escalation, and there were indeed from time to time escalations of the situation, times when ambassadors were withdrawn and the Argentines got involved in a number of actions. There came a time when it was difficult to sustain negotiations, but in fact the negotiations in February in New York went rather well, and the report offers my honourable friend the former parliamentary secretary in the Foreign Office, my honourable friend the member for Shoreham, my right honourable friend the member for Shoreham, a rather nice compliment on the way he handled those negotiations in New York. We had the Argentines wanting transfer of sovereignty, no British government being able to accept or willing to accept transfer of sovereignty or to consider transfer of sovereignty unless it was acceptable to the islanders themselves. That was the dilemma. And it affected both governments. Both governments and Parliament have insisted the wishes of the islanders are paramount. That did put us in a difficult position. Now we have to honour those wishes.
Ray Whitney.
Does my right honourable friend agree that there is a bitter irony, the significance of which will not be lost on the British people, that the right honourable gentleman, the leader for the opposition, in his remarks this afternoon, made reference to paragraph 115 of the report and the need to defend British interests, when given the fact that persistently the same right honourable gentleman has been against adequate defence spending, and that only a few minutes earlier, he reminded the House that for many decades he seeks unilaterally to disarm this country.
Mr. Speaker, the Franks report has seen more people, heard more evidence, seen more papers, more reports, more minutes than any of us. They have come to their conclusions. I believe we have no alternative but to accept their conclusions and to read the wider report before, in fact, we debate it in very much more detail. I did go to tremendous trouble to consult about it for very obvious reasons, and during that war, we did keep, with very, very rare exceptions, all together. I hope we can finish the Falkland story in that way.
Mr. John Morris.
Speaker, if all is well, why on earth did Lord Carrington resign? And why did the Prime Minister plead with him not to?
I pleaded with him not to, because I knew we had an outstanding Foreign Secretary. Lord Carrington resigned because there were very, very adverse comments about, because of the effect of the invasion, and of the very considerable criticism of him at that time, and he thought, therefore, if there was to be total unity from then onwards, which was absolutely vital, that it would be best for him to resign. It was the act of an honourable and a very great Foreign Secretary.
Sir Bernard Brain!
When the dust settles on all this, will it not be realised that successive British governments have been negotiating, at least since the military coup in March 1976, with an unstable, brutal fascist regime, and that the main mistake that such British governments have made is to believing that either Parliament or people would have ever agreed to any transfer of sovereignty over a small British community to such a regime. And looking to the future, would she not agree that the situation could be transformed and we could start to forget Fortress Falklands if Argentina returned to stable, democratic, parliamentary government that recognised fundamental human rights.
Mr. Speaker, I think I agree with, in part, with what my honourable friend says. But I think it will be a long time before many of us can forget the invasion that occurred and the effort required to liberate those islands. And it will require a very, very different attitude on the part of Argentina under whatever kind of government before we can be certain that she would have renounced all claims and would not, in fact, to return to the kind of unpredictable action which one sees under dictators.
Harry Ewing!
Mr. Speaker, can we have an assurance from the Prime Minister that as this matter is debated next week and in the weeks ahead, that she will not adopt her traditional stance of blaming everyone else and advocating her full responsibility for what the former Foreign Secretary Lord Carrington has described as a national humiliation?
Mr. Speaker, the subject of the debate would be the Franks report. We should be debating what Franks said, and I, of course, am happy to debate that.